Hello, this is another edition of All Things Investigative, and today we have two special guests with us. We have Mitch Davis from TSCM Group, and we have Norm Jennings, the owner of RMRI LLC. Both of these people have done the things that you probably watch on TV, but they've done them in real life. So I'll start with Norm. Norm is a Vietnam vet, Marine Force Recon, SEAL Team Detachment Echo, and he worked for a CIA-sponsored program called MACVSOC, which had the highest casualty and kill rate in Vietnam. After he left Vietnam, he was the police commissioner of the Marshall Islands, and he was a government contractor for a while. I'll let Norm elaborate a little more about that later on. Mitch runs TSCM Group. He does all. He is one of the best bug sweepers in the United States, probably in the world. He's been doing this a long time. He's got all the equipment for it, and he does the things that, like I said, you only see on TV. And I will let Mitch elaborate more about that here in just a few minutes. First, let's let Norm talk. Norm, tell a little bit about your history and everything in your own words.
Not in my own words, but first, Mitch, my pleasure to have be with you on this today.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Now, I guess you can just say I'm just as old as dirt. I started very young by being in the Marine Corps for 20 years, and I specialized with at least 10 years in the Marine Corps, what they call today the Special Forces. The Marine Corps called them Division and Battalion and Force Reconnaissance Unit, equivalent and work with equal standards as what people know today is Delta Forces, Navy SEALs, and all those other units. Then when I got out, I had my own PI company, and that was in Virginia. And I did a lot of government contracts overseas. I hooked up with some very well-known people today in the executive and family protection industry, Mr. Mark Yates out of England, and Thomas Laboon, who lives in the United States in the northeast corner. Too damn cold for me, Stacy. And I'm down here in the southwest now. A lot of the basics that I learned was because of being in the special units and working with other people that were giants in their fields at that time. And yes, that's 20, 30 years ago. But basics are basics, and that's what it's really about. What else do you want to know there, Rick?
Well, I want to also get Mitch in here. Mitch, just to tell people, you've done TSCM work for over 25 years, haven't you?
That is correct.
Would you please elaborate a little more about what you do in your own words, please?
We provide technical services in the form of TSCM work and counter-surveillance electronic work to multiple entities throughout the United States.
Okay. Do you have any old stories you can tell that's not kind of classified right now to give people an idea of exactly what you do in a day-to-day operation?
What we do is companies or individuals will contact us to come out and perform electronic countermeasure services for them. Typically, we're a knee-jerk reaction to a problem that somebody has had. in the past or may be having at the current time. And our job is to go out and perform a detailed inspection on a location, a vehicle, a piece of equipment, whatever it may be, and look for any type of surreptitious listening devices or signal interception devices, rogue video cameras, things of that nature, and advise our clients on how not to become a victim of electronic surveillance.
Okay. Now, Mitch, you also do a lot more than that, don't you? You've got a PI license, and you do a lot of, like, corporate resolution disputes and things of that nature, or corporate dispute resolutions, correct?
I wouldn't call it corporate dispute resolutions, but we, my company, TSCM Group in Nashville, is a state-licensed private investigation company, and we've been in business since 2002, so... We started primarily providing technical services for different types of family law cases and actually filtered over into performing work for corporate cases. When we first started, we were one of the few people that were out there that could deploy a digital video recording system and have round-the-clock surveillance on a location, either, you know, in a domestic environment or out in the field for, you know, days and days and days and weeks at a time without ever having to touch the equipment where everybody else is busy trying to get out there and roll around on the ground with a video camera. So we developed techniques and strategies and formed relationships with different vendors and manufacturers of surveillance equipment. And we were able to put that equipment to work and build better cases for our clients, whether it was trying to see somebody putting a set of keys into a doorknob or catching somebody coming and going from a place they either should or should not have been. Basically, over the years, we developed different strategies to obtain and provide video documentation of people engaging in activity that our clients needed to help them with their case or their situation. And as time went on, we, you know, put together different types and methods of obtaining video, different strategies to obtain video. We also learned, you know, everything about the court system that we needed to know so we could present our cases properly and provide the attorneys with what they needed and what somebody, you know, wanted just for the sake of having it. So we learned to, you know, give the attorneys the best toolbox they could ever ask for. Within reason, so they can use those tools and walk into a courtroom and assist their clients. And again, this is all done using a lot of electronic devices and technology, all legal and legit. You can't bring anything illegal into a courtroom. So everything we had to do is legal, legit, and above board. And every time we went to court, we present a case, and the judges got used to seeing us. And we started presenting so many cases in court, every time we'd leave, we'd pick up 10 business cards, and, you know, our business just got bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger as time went on, and that's where it all started. And my background was with electronics, of course, so technical surveillance countermeasures was always something that we were involved with on and off, but at the end of the day, we still were working in an investigation company, so we'd apply our skills and technologies to helping people with, like, again, family law, you know, criminal defense work, just different types of cases. We actually had the first private cellular forensic lab in the state of Tennessee. I opened that up, I think it was around 2005, 2006, and my company and Tennessee Bureau of Investigation were the only ones that had a dedicated mobile forensic lab at that time, and mine was the only private one in the state. So we parlayed on that for a long time and focused on mobile technologies and handheld devices. We've performed forensics on Garmin. When everybody ran Garmin GPS units on their dashboards and windows, we learned to perform forensics on those devices and present that information for different criminal defense cases and other cases over time. And word started to get out and spread around, and we did very well with that for a long period of time. So that's the roots of the company and where we started and what kind of catapulted us to where we're at today.
That's good. One of the things I want to interject here is Mitch taught RMRI LLC a lot because we were behind the power curve, and Mitch generously shared a lot of information with us. talked with us, spent a lot of time talking with us. I was on a government hiatus for about 5 years. And when I got back, we were kind of behind, and Mitch caught us up. So, you know, we were very thankful for his knowledge in the PI business. So, you know, that's one thing I wanted to interject there. I want to go back over to Norm. Norm, you had a PI company in Virginia, right?
Yes, I did.
You own one now, this one.
Yes.
But you had one back in Virginia, too. Would you talk a little bit about that?
That's a good 30, 40 years ago in my memory. At my age, yeah, I'm sharp, but I had a lot of fun.
But we can say this. That was a time when you did things the old-fashioned way.
Oh, absolutely.
Whereas if people didn't have if the private investigators didn't have the technology they had now, they'd be completely lost.
Absolutely. You had to know, and not only know, but be darn polite and courteous when you talk to people and when you go to the courthouse to do your research and how to do that research. It's a lot different today and what have you. And taking a comparison then to what I was doing as the Commissioner of Public Safety and the Police Commissioner with the Republic of the Marshall Islands, which is out in the Pacific Ocean, and it's 2,700 miles southwest of Hawaii. Kind of a little bit of isolation, but it's like 1,100 islands, and I had a fire department, and had everything you can think of, a police department. I had 135 men and women, mostly men, the jail, the fire department.
You had a Marine force, didn't you, Norm? Boats and a
boat? Oh, yeah, I had a 105-foot patrol boat for not, it wasn't smugglers in the sense of speaking that we were chasing and catching up with. It was illegal fishing by other countries. You had 200-mile radius that actually belonged to the Republic of the Marshall Islands. It's a big tuna area, what have you. And one of the big things that a lot of people are not aware of is all the coral reefs that out there that they're buying these tropical fish from is actually destroying a lot of those reefs because the people are blasting the area to stun the fish. A lot more killed than the stun that you can bring up. We had to coordinate with wildlife out of Hawaii and medical things. Modern equipment was a little backwards way out there, but it was a lot of fun, a lot of knowledge gained from both sides. And at the same time, long prior before that, a lot of my basics was learned from the military in the reconnaissance units and trailing people, following people, doing different things, gathering intelligence for the intelligence side of the Marine Corps. And I got to meet a lot of good people once I got out, call it networking, or if you wish. That's how I met some of the giants in the field, and worked with them. And I didn't work with celebrities. I worked more with the business world. I found that to be more enjoyable than with all the celebrities.
Just to interject, to let everyone know, I probably should have said this earlier. However, Norm and I go back 30 years. We started off picking up bond jumpers together in Virginia Beach. That's how we met each other. And we became partners and went all over the United States picking up bond jumpers. Mitch and I go back 20 years. I went to Mitch's place, and we're talking about 21, 22 years ago. I met Mitch. and just stayed in touch with him ever since, because Mitch was such a great guy. He knew what he was doing. He was a high-quality investigator. And those are the people that RMRI LLC wants to be associated with. So, you know, Mitch and I developed a relationship, a working relationship over the years. Isn't that correct, Mitch?
Yes, sir.
So, that is an example of how of the people that RMRI LLC has working for, that will work for us and help us with projects, high quality people. And that's something that's very valuable. Other private investigators have to learn to do that. If you have not so good people working for you, you're going to have not so good results. If you have great people working for you, you're going to have great results. Wouldn't y'all guys say that to be the truth?
By all means, and I would add, you need to really learn from other people, such as, Mitch might know, he's a personal friend now, but when I first met him years ago, first name is Ken, and I'm not going to give the last name out, but he was the CIA technical division, and basically doing what Mitch is doing, but he did it for our government. He and his wife right now are working and have their own company tracking and down and facing and trying to keep the children and young adults out of the children trafficking.
Human trafficking area, that's right. Later on, hopefully, we'll be able to share more information about Ken with you, because we'd like to try to bring him onto a podcast in the future to talk with us and tell us a little more about what he does now and what he did for the government.
And I will also say, these individuals that you meet throughout your working days, nights, years and what have you, they will know much more than what you know, and you can really learn from them. And don't try to be a know-it-all. That's what I can tell you.
That's what happened with us. We fell behind the power curve. At one time, I think I was a pretty decent investigator, private investigator, and I knew a lot about computers, cell phones, things of that nature. Mitch and I would talk a lot back then, and I could keep up. After my little government hiatus, I was behind, and Mitch brought me up to speed. Thank God he did. He taught me a lot more about how the PI business had changed and how things were being done now. Would you care to elaborate a little bit about that, Mitch? Okay. Could you define the difference between how the private investigation business is now and how it was 20 years ago when we were doing it?
I think now versus 20 years ago, there's a lot of tools that folks can use that are working in this business to help make cases better, faster, and stronger. There's different types of validation processes that you can use for information that you're obtaining. It's faster than ever to get a copy of a court case. It's faster than ever to get a summons. Everything's being done electronically, so the paperwork you have to actually handle has been reduced. At the same time, there's much better resources to work cases today than we did 20 years ago. In my opinion, one of the things that I hated to see go is, I think 20 years ago, the quality of video that we had was a lot better than what we have today. I mean, a lot of these courts don't even want to see anything in 4K or ultra high definition because they're using a flat screen TV that they bought in 2009. So,
right.
But you know, bottom line is just video is video, and if you can show a judge or a jury, you know, what's going on, that's all they really care about. So, I mean, we've got great tools to use today, but at the end of the day, the biggest thing that people do lose is their time in court. And today, I think the court systems are so much more liberal and relaxed than it was 20 years ago. So the use of investigation work really doesn't come into play as heavily as it used to. It's not, you know, when somebody was going through a divorce or having a very vicious child custody battle, video and imaging was, you know, king in the courtroom. The judges liked seeing it. It helped make them, they make decisions based on what they could physically see instead of listening to two people in suits chattering back and forth, you know, endlessly with accusations versus, you know, some guy walking away and a woman walking in with a TV on a stand and, you know, hitting the play button and showing exactly what all the judges needed to see, you know, to end all arguments. So I think 20 years ago we had the advantage because we could do that. Today, a lot of the courts don't really care about what could be regarded as moral issues or instances that demonstrate, like, poor morality, if you want to call it that, or poor integrity or poor family values. They just don't care today. So 20 years ago, it was a pretty good ride. Today, it's a much more difficult ride. By the time investigators today get a phone call for a family law case, say for child custody, they've already been, you know, worn out by an attorney. They're financially drained. They're divorced, you know, killed them. Or they spent, you know, tons of money, and they actually got nowhere just by fighting over, you know, who's going to make a decision over, you know, what kind of sneakers a child is going to wear. So, but, you know, again, today, you know, smarter investigators have learned to diversify and get into other things besides just good old, you know, running around in a car and blasting video of somebody that's, you know, faking an injury or feigning illness or, you know, getting involved in theft. It's a lot different today. It's also a lot more difficult today for a private investigator to, you know, work close with law enforcement and help them, not necessarily help them build a case, but, you know, give them direction to make a case of some serious criminal activity. 20 years ago, you could get the ear of a sheriff or a chief of police or a detective with an agency, and sometimes they paid close attention to what you had. If it was something significant, they take and run with it. Today, if they haven't found it or discovered it on their own, they're really not interested in it. Not unless somebody from higher up tells them to get a result and turn over every stone. I think today, the one thing that's good with investigations is you can rely on crowdsourced information to help you with cases and establishing different things for a case. There's a ton of armchair sleuths out there today, which I think is kind of neat. Everybody's got their passion, their hobby, and some, you know, there's been cases where, you know, common public have done some hard work and, you know, teamed up with professional investigators to help develop information on a case to, you know, either bring somebody into the court system, make an arrest, or, you know, prove something. And I think that's a good thing. We really didn't have that 20 years ago because nobody wanted to get involved. Nobody knew how things worked, and nobody had the resources to pretty much jump in and figure out how things really work. You know, TV does a horrible job of showing anybody how the justice system
works. I agree with that. Mitch, Norm wants to jump in for a minute and add to what you just said. You said a lot of really good things there that were realistic. You know, people nowadays don't get a chance to see the real side of what we do and what's going on in our business. Norm, go ahead.
What I want to add to Mitch is that what he said is so true. Your mind is your best tool, not weapons for shooting, not the physical jiu-jitsu, whatever you want to call it today, for fighting. That's all good for protecting yourself. But too many individuals seem to think what they see in the movies and on television is what private investigators should do. A good business like Mitch has just stated, you're going to be working outside of the so-called box. And that means you're mine.
Let me ask this of you, Mitch and Norm. Do you think because of the times, the technology and such, that it has created a situation by which investigators are probably not as good now as they were 20 years ago? They don't have to work as hard. They don't have to investigate as hard. It's all right there in the touch of a keyboard. Whereas back in the days of Norm and you, Mitch, and myself, I remember the time when we had to go to a library for a Coles directory, when we had to go to the courthouse to look up criminal cases or civil cases, when we had to actually get out in the field and talk to people, when we had to go pick up garbage and go through garbage, which I still do, to find out real-time information on people. I don't think PIs do that as much anymore. I'm not sure that it's done a lot in the PI business. So my question is, do you think that the changing of the times has made a lower-grade private investigator?
It's made them lazy.
There you go. And I was going to say, it's not necessarily lower grade. Yeah, I agree. They've folks aren't as proactive as they used to be. I mean, you know, we're talking, you know, collecting trash. I had a case of two of the best attorneys in the state of Tennessee going against each other in court in Nashville with a very high profile client. And I turned over this guy's trash 2 weeks in a row. And was able to turn that whole freaking case completely upside down for our client. And it was just from a simple garbage run. And there's people that found themselves, well, I'm not picking through somebody's trash. I'm not doing this. I'm not doing that. Well, again, we're working a lot of family law cases. You had to be creative. It's just, you know, what can we find? There's allegations of drug use. There's allegations of alcohol when the child's present. So you kind of had to, again, be resourceful and creative to help make your case. And then you just had to hope that the attorney you were working with, you know, was strong enough to use your evidence and maybe put you on the stand to validate it, and then they wouldn't get wishy-washy with it. So, yeah, today people want to take the path of least resistance, which is on their ass with fingers on a keyboard, which you can find some good stuff. But the one word that people don't understand who haven't been doing this is there's one word called hearsay. So that eliminates anything that you don't have physical proof of on your own. And the other part of it to go with hearsay is testimony. There's people who shoot video all day long, put them on the witness stand in the courtroom, and they fall to pieces. They couldn't recite Mary Had a Little Lamb without turning completely upside down and getting booted out of the courthouse. So, you know, it's not just the investigation. It's not just the process. It's just, you know, people aren't being trained on how to present cases. There is people that want to be private investigators that won't go to a local courthouse and sit in a General Sessions courtroom in the back and just watch how things
work. That's right.
Again, you know, fingers on keyboards. Everybody wants the easy way out. Everybody can be, you know, the self-proclaimed badass. But when it comes to, you know, getting out there, getting muddy, dirty, picking through trash, going to the courthouse, you know, spending time with somebody, is just, you know, they're more concerned with trying to figure out how to bill somebody for the paper they used in their printer and the ink that they burned in that printer than they are trying to make their client's case a winner. So I think that's very prevalent today.
My God, you're so right, Mitch. So right. Before I worked in the courtroom with doing PI work, before I testified on stand, provided evidence to attorneys for about 2 years. I would go in and sit in the back of the courtroom and watch cases. What are the attorneys doing? What's their strategy? What is the judge thinking? Why did he rule like this? You know, why did he exclude this evidence? Why did he, not accept this evidence as admissible? What makes evidence admissible in the eyes of the court? All of these questions were questions that I had to figure out before I felt comfortable going into a courtroom and testifying on the stand. That is so right. And you've got PIs now. You couldn't get them within a mile of a courtroom. They'd be scared to death of having to testify on the stand. They wouldn't know what to do. They wouldn't know how to compose themselves. I've seen PIs that were thought of as tough, bad people, you know, people you didn't want to mess with, and all this, break down crying on the stand in a courtroom. I want to let Norm talk. Norm's got some things to add on this. Please, go ahead, Norm.
Yeah. While I was out there in the Marshall Island, out in the Pacific Ocean area, where all those islands and different things, not only did I have to know the local law, but I had to know international law because of the fishing industry, you know, the ship that would come through, the aircraft that would land on the main island, what have you. There were the abductions of children between a husband and wife or whoever partner they may have. Again, a lot of the young women are out there that fall in what they call love with a local guy, and they have children, and all of a sudden he takes off, and what island is he going to? That creates a different state of questions. And being in the courtroom, I had to prep my police officers a lot of time. Everything Mitch is saying, I can only say, yes, been there, what a headache.
Well, everyone, I hope you got something out of this podcast. It's ran a little long, but that's okay, because we have given some good information and given you a realistic view of what the private investigation business is like. I'm going to let Norm and Mitch end, and then we're going to say goodbye.
Yeah. Well, it's my pleasure being here on this broadcast, and I hope they do, you out there in the audience, gain some knowledge. And I look forward to having lunch, dinner with you, Mitch. I've got an old friend that you might know. He's deceased now that we can talk about. And his name was Jack Mungus, and he was in the D.C. area. So thank you for listening to us, and I turn it over to Mitch.
Mitch, go ahead.
Yeah, not too much to say, but, you know, thanks for inviting me on here. And I know, bottom line for the listeners, if somebody's interested in investigation work, then, you know, get an education, get a CJ degree, you know, get some professional training. And if you really think you'd like to do some of this work, here's a simple test for you. Go to a big box store, grocery store, or something like that, and just, you don't have to do anything, you know, illegal, but just go on foot and follow somebody in the store. Go see what they buy. Follow them outside when they're done. Watch them load their groceries, whatever it is in their car, and then get in your vehicle and see if you can follow that person all the way to the house, their house, without getting detected. If you can do that three times in a row, you're probably going to be in a good place, and you'll probably do really well with this. And again, that's part of a foundation. The other part of this too is, you know, if you're doing any investigation work, remember, be creative, turn over every rock. You know, getting into arguments with people over legalities and what you can do, what you can't do. The idea is to, you know, use every resource you can to get results to support your case and your client. That's what a private investigator gets paid to do. As far as running around and telling stories and shooting video of you know, people training their dogs to do cartwheels and their kids having parties on their front lawn, I mean, it's all a big fallacy. It's just, you need to produce tools for what the attorneys want. And today, that's the main job. Or for your boss or whoever, you know, whatever the desired outcome is, typically you're there to document things. There's, you know, as you go on with this, there's different directions to go, but don't forget the basics. It's all about, you know, being able to tell a story and show somebody that story that knows nothing about what's going on. And whatever you have to show them will lead them to reasonably believe that this is actually what happened. And there's no doubt in my mind, and, you know, this thing just backs itself up, you know, 20 times over. So if you can do that, then you probably have a good shot at doing really well as a private investigator. So thanks for listening, and thanks for having me on the podcast.
All right, guys. It was a pleasure to have both of you on. Very high quality people that are legends in their fields. And it's a pleasure to be associated with them. We're going to end the podcast. We hope everybody got something out of this. Have a good day. Take care.